This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. In the previous hour, we've been discussing and debating, essentially, A, should we be showing the pictures of the consequences of mass shootings, the way that, frankly, during the Vietnam era, we saw many of the pictures of the gruesome horrors of the war in Vietnam, which I think, you know, fed a lot of the emotional, strong emotional response to it. Should we be showing these pictures? Number one. And number two, is Joe Biden doing a brilliant move or making a terrible mistake? And he, of course, he hasn't made this move yet, but he's got apparently a war between his advisors. He invited Stacey Abrams to lunch in D.C. a few days ago, and some of his advisors are saying that when he rolls his campaign out, because he's this old guy, that he should announce that Stacey Abrams is going to be his VP candidate right out of the gate. Or is that just a ploy to suggest that, to get support, and then never do it? I don't know, but it's been for some interesting conversations. But in the meantime, or, you know, coming into our second hour here, on the line with us is Julio Rivera, the writer for Reactionary Times, columnist with Newsmax, The American Thinker, townhall.com. ReactionaryTimes.com is his website. His Twitter handle is Oh Yeah, It's Julio. And Julio, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thank you for having me, Tom.
So we got this this ranking of the happiest countries in the world, the World Happiness Ranking for 2016 through 2018, for the last 3 years. And the happiest country in the world is Finland, number one, followed by Denmark, number two, then Norway, Iceland, the Netherlands, Switzerland, Sweden, New Zealand, Canada, Austria, Australia, Costa Rica, Israel, Luxembourg, United Kingdom, Ireland, Germany, and Belgium, the top 18. And then the 19th is the United States. What those top 18 all have in common is that they are all democratic socialist countries, or they all practice what they refer to as social democracy. And three of those countries have a higher percentage of refugees among their population than we do here in the United States. So is it time, Julio, for us to become happy, to put happiness as our highest value rather than, quote, you know, the freedom to die like a dog in the ditch because you're lacking health care or housing or employment? You know, the thing that Ron Paul said back in 2011, I believe it was, during the Republican primaries, when he said that, if somebody is dying in front of a hospital because they can't afford to get health care, that shows how free we are.
Well, you know, first off, Tom, let me just preface this by saying those Scandinavian countries, they all live by these unwritten rules of what they call Janteloven. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It was basically, some of the writings of, I guess, Axel Sandemose. And the mentality that people possess in these countries, they have basically what they refer to as like the Ten Commandments of Jante. Basically, these people are taught that you're not to think that you're anything special. You're not to think that you're as good as we are. You're not to think that you're smarter than we are. These people, they look down in these countries. They look down on people that try to be exceptional.
Julio, you know, Julio, you've never lived in any of these countries. I lived for a year in Germany, which is one of these countries. It's number 17, and I can tell you that that's not the case. They're obsessive about achievement, and I believe that to be the case.
No, they're actually not.
And that's not the case in Costa Rica. That's not the case in Israel. It's not the case in the United Kingdom. They all score higher than us. It's not the case in Ireland. The only thing that I can see in common between these countries, because they literally, Australia is another whole continent, right? The only thing I can see in common among all of them is that they all practice democratic socialism. They all have basically free college education and free health care.
Okay, but why are these countries swinging to the right? I mean, look at in Denmark, right? You had Lars Rasmussen winning a victory for the Conservative Party in 2015. In Sweden, in 2018, the Swedish Democrats didn't do that well. The far right is rising in Sweden.
Be careful what you're praising here, because the right that is rising in many of these countries, and this is happening all over the world, in large part because of these massive refugee crises that are caused by global warming. All these refugees out of the Middle East that came out of the Arab Spring.
Being caused by global warming. That's ridiculous.
No, it absolutely is. The Arab Spring was caused by, you know, farmers, hundreds of thousands of square miles of farmland were wiped out over the last 20 years as a consequence of the desert moving south. It moved south about 100 miles in Syria, which displaced over a million farmers.
They all end up
in Damascus. And that fed the Arab Spring, and then the Arab Spring produced the refugee crisis along with our involvement in Libya. And then that refugee crisis spilled into Europe, and now you've got European politicians saying, oh my God, Muslims and brown people are coming into our countries. And those are the people who you're referring to as a swing to the right. But the Europeans are not saying we don't want our health care system or we don't want free education.
Their health care system sucks, Tom. Let's face it. I mean, European health care is terrible.
Why do they have lower maternal death rates than we do in the United States? Why do they have lower infant mortality rates than we do in the United States? Why do they have longer lifespans than we do in the United States?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with just the population in general. I mean, we have a larger population here. There's a lot of different factors. You can't just across the board say that their system is better.
I actually did.
A lot of people. Listen, I know people that live in Europe, okay? I have a lot of associates that are in Europe. If you want to go see the doctor, people throw their hands up and give up down there because it just takes too long to be seen. The one thing I will give them, and this is probably going to run contrary to what people would expect me to say, but the one good thing is that their pharmaceuticals are a lot cheaper than they are in this country, and we do need to reform, you know.
Well, not only that, Julio, if your concern is how long it takes to see a doctor, try seeing a doctor in the United States. When Louise and I first moved to Washington, D.C., and she takes a thyroid medication, and she had to get her prescription refilled, and you know, she spent like 3 days calling every doctor in D.C. trying to get an appointment, and the earliest she could get was 6 months out.
Well, my daughter got diagnosed with Graves' disease. She has a thyroid disorder, too, and she was seen the same day. And she has no problem.
Well, good. I'm glad you've got a good doctor, and maybe that was but the fact of the matter is every American can tell you stories about trying to see a doctor, trying to see a specialist, or trying to get a procedure and being told, sorry, you're going to have to wait 2 days, or 2 weeks, you're going to have to wait 2 months. That is a common thing in the United States. It is not that common, frankly, in Europe. I lived in Europe for a year.
What's the problem, then, in Venezuela, then? You know,
well, Venezuela is not one of the
example of
is not one of the happiest countries in the world. Venezuela is pretty miserable.
No, it's not. It's absolutely not.
And Venezuela is not a democratic socialist country. Venezuela was more of a true socialist country, and that's a complete red herring, Julio.
It's all the same thing.
No, it's not all the same thing. I'm talking about democratic socialism.
The only way that you could enforce having a state that large, having a government that large that takes care of everything, is to eventually rule by force. This is an eventuality that the Scandinavians have seen and have become smart enough to start electing right-leaning politicians and changing their policies because they
So let me get this failing. Straight. You're suggesting, and I understand why, the Koch brothers would say this because they're billionaires, but I don't understand why you would say that if we tax our businesses and if we tax our rich people enough that we can all have free education for our kids and free health care for all of us, that somehow that is the tyranny of government that's being forced upon us? Is that your argument?
No, but my argument is that, first of all, there is no such thing as free. So take that out of your vocabulary. None of this stuff is free. In fact, allowing the government into private education is the reason why tuition rates have risen exponentially and the reason why American students have these massive education debt.
Yeah, we should absolutely do away with these for-profit schools and colleges. I'm with you on that, but I still don't understand how having society bear the cost. Let me rephrase this: how having society bear the cost of healthcare and education is tyranny. I don't understand that.
Having society bear how that's tyranny because. It should be, opt in if you wish. There's some people that may not. Because, I mean, people could, if you're generally healthy, listen, first off, America is one of the most unhealthy countries in the world. I mean, people are obesity rates, and a lot of that is obviously disgusting. It's going to cause the cost of health care to rise. And there's another elephant in the room.
Well, here's the thing, Julio. Let me just respond to what you just said, if I may. Please. That. Yes, we've got a higher obesity rate in the United States than probably any of these other countries. And the reason why is because all these other countries have a national healthcare system where the government And the people as a society are invested in the idea of having everybody be healthy. I mean, you know, Denmark went so far as to close, all, you know, we did our show for 2 weeks from their capital city. It was at Copenhagen, I believe. They shut down a bunch of streets for bikes. You know, literally half the people in the capital city of Denmark bike to work. And this is the result of a government initiative to try and make people healthier so that they wouldn't spend as much on health care. Now, we're not paying for the health care. Individuals are paying for it.
No, we are. We actually are. Because you know what? If you can't afford health care in this country, you're offered a subsidy.
No, I mean, we as a society. Well, yeah, okay, then we as a society.
We already have nationalized health care in a sense. We really do, because
yeah, it's called the Veterans Administration.
If I can't afford health care, I can apply for nationalized health care or the version of it that we have here in our country right now, and I would receive a subsidy. I would pay nothing into the system, and I can go on with pre-existing conditions. I can be a diabetic. I can have cancer. I can have all these things.
And you think that's a bad thing?
Well, no, but what I'm saying is it should. We could have a much better system if we applied choice to our system. The way that we should get rid of
Medicaid. Is that what you're saying? Because the program you're talking about is Medicaid for low-income people. We should just get rid of it?
No, we should reform it to the point where anybody who's able to work is at least contributing something into the system. This is something that Donald Trump talked about.
Well, the vast majority of people on Medicaid are working. It's the program that subsidizes. That's why we say it's the subsidy for Walmart. It's, you know, and McDonald's and all these other low-paying jobs. Those people who work those low-paying jobs are on Medicaid.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who don't do anything and are totally subsidized by the taxpayer, and that's a problem in this country.
I strongly disagree. I think the number of people who are actually, quote, making a living, end quote, being on the dole is so insignificant, so inconsequential.
No, it's not insignificant because it happens in the larger populated cities in our country. Listen, Tom, you can't tell me because I literally grew up in the ghetto. I've seen people who have made, you know, living off of the dole.
Then Julio, let's make the government the employer of last resort and make, you know, like FDR said, you know, I don't want to give money to people, I want to give jobs to people. Why don't you do that? Why don't you support the Green New Deal?
Okay, Tom.
Okay. All right. Okay. Julio Rivera, reactionarytimes.com, and oh yeah, it's Julio is his Twitter handle. Hang on just a second, Julio, we're going to get stepped on here.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Julio, thanks a lot for dropping by and talking with me today.
Hey, God bless, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Back at you. We'll be back. And welcome back. Robin in Kingston, Washington. Hey, Robin, what's on your mind?
I do have an input about both of the questions of the previous hour, which is the Biden-Abrams thing, and then if it'll be brief. I think that, and then the other one is the pictures. The Biden-Abrams thing is quite shocking to me, and I think it's a horrible idea. First time we got a whole bevy of good candidates, and all of a sudden we change the way we do business. Anyways, the way that I look at this is that I think that Biden is sort of a representative of the power elite, the old guard, the oligarchs, or whatever you might want to call them. So I see this as a battle between the old and the new. And they're willing to risk what I would consider to be a upcoming split in the Democratic Party by tying in, it's just a kind of a token correction by Biden. His record is so bad, by tying in Stacey Abrams early on here. This is just a real, real disaster.
It hasn't been done. It's a trial balloon being floated by some people on his campaign, and they're saying that there's other people who are opposed to it. And I'm wondering if this is just an attempt by some people on the Biden campaign to make Joe seem like, you know, he would be enthusiastic about this because he loves Stacey Abrams, and therefore, if you love Stacey Abrams, you should love Joe Biden.
I see it as panic Biden trickery, and it will not work. Anyways, so that's just my opinion. Then the other thing is the pictures of war. In my opinion,
and mass shootings.
And mass shootings, right. But it's the same subject.
Right.
And I've already had some commentary about how the Vietnam War stopped. And what I will say to you is that starting at Grenada, I guess that's called, the U.S. military has embedded the has embedded the press into its operation. So now that any press that comes out of any type of a war front is completely filtered and controlled by the military. Yeah. And the only way the Pentagon can conduct war is really by secrecy or by deception. They learned that in Vietnam, okay? They also learned about not to draft in Vietnam. So this whole thing is a clever way to keep the war going, because they know if they informed us with the pictures that we would withhold consent. And my position is this democracy is healthy only with informed consent. Yeah. And I can't say that I'm a peace activist. I haven't stopped at this stuff, and this is the core essential frustration that we had.
I think, Robin, there's a threshold of sorts. You know, we saw the pictures out of Syria of these dead little kids who had been the victims of gas attacks, and some of them looked pretty ghastly. And we've seen some of the bombing victims when Syria bombed their own people. But we haven't seen the people who are the victims of our behavior. Now, I don't think that we should show naked bodies that have been blown apart. But I think that, you know, showing serious injuries, showing serious wounds, showing the real damage of war on both sides should be the responsibility of the press.
I agree.
So, okay, thank you, Robin. Good talking with you. We'll be back. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Back with more of your calls right after this. And welcome back, Mike in Seattle. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. A great example of how to really pay tribute to the people that have died would be the Grenfell Tower disaster that happened in 2017 in Britain.
Right.
72 people died there. And they have decided to have a public inquiry, which is being broken down into two parts. The first part has already happened. And in that first part, it started out with literally days, weeks of tributes from the survivors talking about who was lost.
Right.
And then going on to what actually happened. And the second part is to see why it happened.
Right.
Very strong.
So, and New Zealand, to a certain extent, is doing this right now. They're going through this grieving process, and we're learning more and more about the victims. And I think that there's been an effort on the part of the media in the United States to talk more about the victims of gun violence. But is that enough?
Well, but in Britain, they didn't forget about it. It was on every newspaper.
Right, but did they show the pictures of the people who died in Grenfell Tower?
As close as they could. Actually, there were many, many people that were at fault. Almost everybody was at fault because of what happened. But, you know, they were told to stay in their units.
Yeah, and I'm guessing most of those people died of smoke inhalation, so because that was the problem. Yes. The building was sheathed with this horrible, flammable stuff.
The rehab broke the building is what it did.
Yeah.
And so the rehab was totally the wrong rehab for that building.
Right. No, I get it. Okay, Mike, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Anthony in
Tehachapi, Tom.
Thank you, Anthony. in California. So go for
Tom,
it.
I do agree that they should. In my 55 years, Tom, I used to watch Vietnam as a young kid. It was like you said, that guy who got shot in the head. I remember that image in elementary school. And then when Reagan and Bush were experimenting in my neighborhood with cocaine by the boatload, I had a lot of friends that were murdered. Sometimes I didn't see it. Sometimes I did. You see somebody get killed in front of you, Tom. That's an image you'll never forget if you have any compassion.
Yep.
And then I worked in prison, Tom. I'm retired now. And I used to see people get blown away in there by the cops. Mm-hmm. And some of the cops didn't want to kill people. They would tell me, I shot him in the leg or I shot him in the arm because I didn't want to kill him. But you know, also, what do you think about this, Tom? Not just showing the images, but if you want to purchase a weapon, they should make you go to your local county office and go to a coroner's office and see an autopsy. And preferably of someone who's a child. That makes these people not want to purchase guns or want to kill them.
Wow. That's strong stuff. Anthony, let me think about that. That's fascinating. Anthony, thanks for the call, and thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. It's 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. We'll continue with our conversation about all these things and democratic socialism right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 202-808-9925.
So is a nation that gives free health care and education to its kids a tyranny? Really? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Fascinating stuff. We've got a lot of topics here. And just kind of a commentary on the times. Back, you know, I've been doing this show for 15 years. And back before the 2004 election, we had, for about a decade, we had a message board on our website at tomhartman.com. We shut it down a few years back. Because basically, you know, Twitter and Facebook and everything have taken over that space, which is fine. And now our chat room, by and large, is over on YouTube, in fact. But and we don't have forums anymore. But we did at that time. And in 2004, leading up to that election, there were all these right-wing trolls that suddenly showed up. 2008, right-wing trolls showing up. 2012, right-wing trolls just exploding. And so now I'm looking at my Twitter feed, and I'm seeing two bots arguing with each other, right, about who's more progressive or something like that. It was weird. You look at them, and they're like, yes, so, you know, 1,000 tweets and 12 followers. And it's just fascinating. So anyhow, I'm telling you this story by way of saying, if you start seeing people really yanking your chain on Twitter, take a look at their profile. You can just mouse over it typically and see it. And if it's somebody who's got lots and lots of tweets and no followers, then in all probability, it's a bot. And they're getting these bots, these, you know, the computer-run, basically, humanoids are actually pretty damn smart now. So, anyhow. Kelly in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Kelly, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just want to respond to Julio, and I'm not picking on him at all because we all have our differences. Medical care is a human right.
Medical care is a human. I'm sorry, Kelly, your phone is sounding really, really weird.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you just said medical care is a human right?
Yes, correct it is. And I've been to many of the Northern European countries. I've been to Canada and Mexico. And I can tell you, I talk to the people when I travel. They are all very satisfied. There isn't this huge wait that Julio would tell us. They get proper care. They get to keep their doctors that they have started out with. I could go on. I won't. Secondly, because of our diving lack of education, especially in history and critical thinking, that tells me a lot about how and why we have what we do today in the White House.
Right.
So I would say my kids traveled so hard and have so much debt from grad schools, and they're giving back to the world. So my point being, we do need free both.
Yeah. Okay. Well said, Kelly. Thank you. And thank you for that. And by the way, to Julio's comment about obesity, I think a large part of the obesity problem we have in the United States is the fact that our food supply is filled with poison. And, Europeans don't allow Roundup on their products, you know, on their food products. We do. Europeans don't allow high fructose corn syrup in everything, the stuff that now it looks like it causes fatty liver disease on top of obesity. We do. And, you know, Louise and I were in London a couple of weeks ago, and I had a Coke. I mean, the conference we were at, they were giving away Coke products. And so I got a bottle of Coca-Cola and look at what's it made with? Sugar, not high fructose corn syrup. I think we've got a poisonous diet here. Which again, we wouldn't have if we had a national health care system. Then the government would be saying, wait a minute, we're going to be paying for the cost of these things? Pierre in Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Pierre, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. What's up?
Good. Well, I was going to weigh in on the issue about photos of the New Zealand victims.
Mm-hmm.
Are we still there?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think, and you made mention of this, and I think it could be emphasized a little more. I think the wishes of the victim's family have to be paramount here. I mean, who could understand better than they the importance of whatever deterrent value publishing such horrific photos might have? I don't know that we can really say we know that's important enough that we need to publish those. That's for them to say.
Well, that's a survey, Pierre, that to the best of my knowledge has never been done. And it would be fascinating to poll the survivors and the families of the victims of Newtown or any of the mass shootings that we've had, and ask them, do you think that the pictures of your friends and loved ones, in death, and not the sanitized, ones for the coffin, do you think these pictures should be distributed? I honestly don't know what percentage of people would say yes versus no. Do you have any sense of that?
No idea at all.
That's the story the media usually says is, we're not showing these pictures out of, respect for the victims' families. Well, maybe the victims' families think these pictures should be seen. I mean, that was Emma Till's mother's position, and she opened the casket and allowed Jet magazine to publish that picture, and it went around the world. I mean, it energized the civil rights movement in the United States. And I think that if we saw a pile of dead children parts from Newtown, I mean, apparently there was a pile of kids in one corner where they all kind of were standing together and they got mowed down and literally arms got blown off and stuff. And it was just this pile of kind of, little tiny humanity. Maybe if that picture was taken from 20 feet away, so individual characteristics were not so distinguishable, that could have been, the equivalent of that Emmett Till picture. In other words, the thing that causes Americans to say, oh, my God, never again.
Right. And, not only Emmett Till, but when the lynching, what would you call it, epidemic was really running rampant in the early part of the 1900s, a lot of those pictures got overseas. And I think informed a lot of that discussion. But I still think, perhaps more useful than a poll in the case of something that's really recent and fresh, like New Zealand, something like a release saying, you're the surviving family member of this victim. We would like to publish this image. Do you give your consent? And really,
that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. But first, the first barrier to overcome is the willingness of the media to publish any of those pictures.
Well, not slighting you and what you do for a living, but there are a lot of folks in the media and the mass media and the corporate media who are driven not by senses of decency or what's right to do, but, in the words of Les Moonves, what's good for CBS.
Yeah. Although, I'm not sure that this would have an impact one way or the other on the bottom line. But, it's weird that the very same conservatives who talk about the nanny state and say it's just wrong that we need to be protected from everything and people get triggered and they're snowflakes and blah, quack, 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 are the ones who are saying, oh, no, we should never see the pictures of shooting victims.
Yeah, well,
we're just too fragile.
They don't apply that standard to a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, so, you're right.
I think that kind of nonsense doesn't deserve a hearing.
There you go. Okay, Pierre, thanks for the call. James in Mineola, Texas. Hey, James.
Hello.
Hey, VP nomination?
I got a question.
Sure.
Why wouldn't you just go ahead for Joe Biden? Why wouldn't you take this person who came in second place?
Well, that has happened in the past, but it's not the most common thing.
Why wouldn't you just take the person in second place so then everybody gets what they want out of your party?
Well, somebody earlier called and suggested that, and I think that that's probably a pretty good idea, although, sometimes there are, like the reason Jack Kennedy picked Lyndon Johnson, even though he didn't come in second place, was he needed Texas, and he knew he couldn't win the White House without Texas, and there was no way a Democrat was going to win Texas unless he was from Texas. So Lyndon Johnson basically gave him the White House in 1960. So, if Joe Biden is a northern liberal, from Delaware, and Stacey Abrams is from Georgia, she's a progressive Democrat from Georgia, she's providing regional balance in addition to obviously ideological and racial balance. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not arguing for or against it. I think it's a fascinating thing. I would love to hear every other Democratic nominee say, if I got picked, here are the top three people that I would want as vice president. And I would love to hear who would be in their cabinet too. But on the other hand, this might be a giant shoot yourself in the foot thing that Biden's campaign is floating, if that's what's happening. James, thanks for the call. Anthony in Philadelphia. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing? Pleasure
good
to be on.
Thank you.
I have. Can you hear me?
Just fine. Yeah.
Okay. I have issues with one, but Joe Biden is. And I think that it's pandering to the black community, which was lost in his state, because at the end of the day, the Democratic establishment, the representatives of the old guard, understand that social media serves as an archive. We can run the tape. And the black community, we're finding out that these rock stars of the Democratic Party, these old school rock stars, have been some of the biggest obstructioners to key issues such as adequate funding and education for us. Yeah. And I think Joe Biden sees that he would be the male version of Hillary Clinton, and his support amongst the African community will quickly erode. So if Stacey Abrams ties herself to this man who is clearly using her as a prop, it will ruin her career, and the Democratic Party will yield most.
So you're disagreeing with Jesse Jackson that this would be Joe Biden's way of proving that he has learned a lot since he took on Anita Hill?
Well, I disagree with incrementalists such as Jesse Jackson on many issues. So it's not a surprise that I don't see eye to eye with Jesse Jackson here.
Yeah. So you is this an aspect of incrementalism that you're talking about?
I wouldn't say that it's an aspect of incrementalism. To me, it's an aspect of ambition and ego. If he really was about this nation, he would understand that he missed his opportunity by not leading with integrity when he had the chance.
Yeah, I get
it. And it's time for him to sit down and let the new ideals really take over, and let some fresh blood really do what he never had the courage to do.
My suspicion is if Joe Biden enters the race, and it's increasingly looking like he's going to, that I just don't see him, even though he's polling way at the front right now, I don't see him winning the Democratic primary, period. But we'll see. Anthony, with or without Stacey Abrams, we'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In 4 minutes, we're going to check in with Bob Ney over at Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world. Stick around. And welcome back, Rich in Indiana. Hey, Rich, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Thank you, Tom. I wanted to comment on the idea of imagery to help us understand the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And I need folks to really think about how the history of war and its imagery has been so carefully crafted and shaped, manicured by our media and our government. Way back at the beginning of World War I, we were getting these, rah-rah songs for everyone to sing as the caissons go rolling along. And I would say that most people in the United States are aware that the poppy is the flower of the Veterans Day, but I would say that most people don't know why. Poppies covered the battlefields after the war.
Right.
And they had been blown out of the soil, having washed down very deeply where they would not germinate, and the high-explosive TNT shells that had chewed up the landscape had thrown all of these poppy seeds to the surface where they would germinate and flower. And there's this big poppy bloom in Southern California because of the
rains.
Winter rains.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that happened all over the battlefields. And people's bodies had poppies growing up through them, these decomposed skeletons.
Hmm.
And there was this sense of real loss and horror about the imagery of the poppy and what it was, but we don't know that in the United States. Hmm. This was taught to me by an 80-year-old Briton who was my architecture professor.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. I saw this big sculpture installation of all of these poppy flowers with the Prince of England walking and looking at the display a couple of years ago, And I think that most people in Great Britain still remember what poppies mean.
Yeah. In all probability, I mean, this is something unique to Europe. So the bottom line here, Rich, are you arguing that because our understanding and our imagery of war is largely sanitized and mythologized, that the way to correct that is to start showing the actual pictures of the carnage caused when we drop, you know, bombs on other countries, or when mass shooters shoot up a school here in the United States?
Well, I think that the real concern is that we've been really desensitized with all of the imagery management, and the stuff that they're showing right now to recruit kids into the Army looks like a first-person perspective shooting game.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've seen some of those, some of the reels that they play before the movies. The simple reality is, by the way, the whole video game shoot 'em up video game thing was invented by the military as a way of training troops. These were the equivalent of a flight simulator for an airplane pilot. So
DARPA project.
Yeah, yeah. Rich, it was a DARPA project. You're absolutely right. Rich, thanks a lot for the call. Fascinating stuff. We're going to check in with Bob Ney in just a minute with Talk Media News. Stick around. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, exposing the con in conservative. So let's check in with Bob Ney with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Loving What You Do, a new book by Ellen Ratner. And on the line with us, the author of Sideswiped, former Republican Ohio Congressman Bob Ney. Bob, welcome back.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
So what's going on in the world? What's at the top of your hit parade?
Well, a few breaking items. First, at 3:15 today, the president is going to sign an executive order, and it'll be protecting free speech on college campuses. And it will direct 12 agencies that fund money through research, in particular, to college campuses to make sure that these college campuses are adhering to free speech. And if they aren't, then monies can be withheld.
So here's the question, Bob. You and I both know that really the name of this legislation should be put right-wing crazies on campus and let them say whatever they want, or we're going to punish you, right? I mean, this is all about Yano and Ann Coulter and this kind of thing. So once this legislation passes, what's to stop, you know, the Lyndon LaRouches? What's to stop the actual Marxists and Leninists and Maoists from saying, you know, who have traditionally been basically banned from campuses because they're so far outside the mainstream, just like I would argue Milo and Ann Coulter are. What's to stop them from saying, you know, hey, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me? I mean, might the theory of unintended consequences blow this back in the face of the administration?
Well, it could, Tom. Now, on another angle, if you have a conservative type of institution out there, and then they refuse somebody who is, quote, you know, liberal, progressive, then it could apply to them, except, of course, the administration through the cabinet is overseeing this. So let's face it, selection could be in the eye of the beholder.
But if this passes and you get a Democratic administration and I say, I want to speak at Falwell University and Jerry Falwell's preventing me, do I have a leg to stand on
it? Yes. I mean, it could come back. And it's an executive order. So he's going to do this without any of the support, you know, any yeses or noes from the Congress.
Oh, interesting.
It's going to be by executive order at 3:15 today.
Yeah. Okay. Fascinating. What else is up?
Well, he also made a statement. I wasn't able to read through it that much before we came on air here, but he is now saying that the United States needs to recognize full sovereignty of Israel over the Golan Heights, which was an area annexed, you know, from Syria. And as he has, you know, assigned his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to be kind of the overseer of the Israeli-Palestinian peace deals, obviously this is not going to bode well to be able to get the Palestinians, you know, to the table.
Right.
And then, of course, you have the when you look at the Kushners in the Mideast, you can't have a day without talking about influence. And then now Joshua Kushner, who does claim to be a Democrat and has contributed to Beto O'Rourke, as you know, he's publicly stating that, which, you know, anybody can contribute, let's face it, to anybody. But they're questioning the New York Times piece, once again, the influence of the Kushners, be it the father, be it Joshua Kushner or Jared Kushner, and his attendance at the Davos economic, you know, proceedings.
Well, and also there's, you know, the Bibi Netanyahu part of this. Jared Kushner literally grew up with Bibi Netanyahu staying in his home from time to time.
Correct. Yes, he did. And then, so you've got, you know, Bibi Netanyahu, by the way, of course, is heading to the United States on Monday and Tuesday. So the president makes this announcement, you know, ahead of time, ahead of his arrival. And then this is going to be stirred up. I can pre-tell you this because I looked at the article today about Representative Max Rose, who's a Democratic member from New York, who made a statement that as a young congressman, I want to get this right, I've got to tell you I'm sorry. You sent me to Congress to take responsibility. You sent me to Congress to have your back, and I failed you. And that's in relationship to the comments that Congresswoman Omar made. How did he fail? Did he fail to control everything that she would be thinking or saying? And I raise this issue because you can bet with a congressman getting so touchy and making that statement after twice there's been resolutions, you know, to, quote, contain what she said, then you can bet the president is going to stir this when Benjamin Netanyahu comes here.
Oh, yeah.
You can just bet he's going to do it.
Sure.
For sure.
Yeah, of course.
Right. Right. And then,
right.
Then there's the wall, the funding for the wall, and the piece was put out, I think it was a 20-page report so far of where the money is coming from through the Pentagon, and most likely I would bet that this will be upheld because it would be a long court battle, so right now it's going to be dependent on members of Congress, House and Senate, who, Tom, look and see what's being done to their military appropriations, you know, being construction and jobs, et cetera.
Because the military is saying this, you know, to give Trump his money for his wall out of the military budget means we're going to have to dial back on upgrading military housing, upgrading military facilities, you know, rebuilding some of, you know, we've got some places where there's mold in the walls and buildings falling down and falling apart, schools, and we want to fix them, and Trump is going to take that money for his wall, basically.
Well, yes, and they're being very aggressive about it. You can see that they're not letting the grass grow before, you know, under their feet, Tom. They're working on this very swiftly, very effectively from the president's point of view.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Bob Ney with Talk Media News. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you. We'll be back. We're going to be in the next hour talking about Nikki Haley. Is she really that dumb? I mean, really? Yeah, I think you're going to find this fascinating. Stick around. It's coming up on the top of the hour, of course.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.